With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK technology podcast with him, Ian Morris.
And him, Nate Langson.
There's basically no news this week.
Better than it was last week, I would say.
I just thought we can cut this quite easily and just say, well, thanks for listening, everybody. And
see you next week.
Do you have anything else to say, Ian?
No, thanks for the show.
Bye. Lol. Just kidding.
But it's very slick, though.
Thank you. It has been a very, very poor week news-wise. We picked out a few things that I think will be quite interesting, but we're gonna rattle a few things that we've been posting up on at Text Message Pod, which is the Twitter home of the text message hive mind, which is to say,
shall we move it to Mastodon? For
well, who knows? Yeah, maybe we will. We've got a few things to talk about. We're going to talk about toilets. We're going to talk about 6G. We're going to talk about BBC's HD regional versions that Ian's been writing up because I wanted to know how it worked. And if you're a patron in our extended version, you're also going to hear about the 10 worst computer mice ever, or at least the ones we think are the worst of the worst, sir. But we're going to start by talking about one of my least favorite things that used to be one of my favorite things, scooters. Was it The Guardian? Yes, I think this is The Guardian, wrote that Paris is considering banning them. There's like 15,000 of them in Paris alone. It's one of the biggest markets for e-scooters, for rental e-scooters, that is. But people are saying, well, it's annoying to pedestrians and they clog up the streets and people are just basically sick of them. And they've got to renew their license in February, but the mayor is expected to announce a decision in the coming weeks, and it's quite possible that the rule will be, you've had your time, enough's enough, go away. What I found interesting about this is largely because Paris has always been the sort of like the test center and one of the, if not the biggest markets for scooters. It was the city has always been very pro scooter, and a lot of other cities have pointed to France and said, countries and cities have pointed to France and Paris and said, well, look, this is how it can work in Paris. The UK is still in the middle of a trial that's been going on for a couple of years at this point. There's a large list of cities that are running e-scooter trials, but we're doing it in a very, very regulated way where you have to get permission as a town or a city to even operate them, and owning and riding your own is still illegal. And that test is ongoing, whereas Paris has gone full throttle the other direction and said, you know what, we let everyone do this for 4 years, but actually now we're sick of them. It's one of the most highly regulated markets, The Guardian points out. It had about 1.2 million riders last year, which was and had a 76% increase in new users between last summer and the summer just gone. And again, according to The Guardian, the majority of those people are Parisians, or at least people who live in Paris, not necessarily ones who were born there. Is that a Parisian? Do you have to be born there to be a...
No, I don't think so. You don't have to be born in London to be a Londoner, and you don't have to be born in New York to be a New Yorker. It's
fair.
Because those cities are so reliant on people coming there, I feel like you can become a resident of a city without ever being born there.
I've completely changed my tune on scooters to the point that I even sold my very expensive one the other day for several hundred pounds, which I was quite pleased about because it cost me about 1,500 quid when I bought it about 2 years ago, and used it for quite a while and managed to flog it for about 400 pounds because it was still in very good condition. So I got a nice little return on that. But I just got so fed up with them, and I'm fed up of seeing police ignore children riding them two abreast. I see it every day I'm in London. I see it on my road here in Hertfordshire, where I live, I've gone from loving them and almost advocating for them to really quite detesting them.
Well, I understand that, Because what you've said is true. They are abused quite badly. However, what I will say is, as a driver and someone obviously who loves cars just as a sort of hobby kind of thing, I'm really getting annoyed by the constant whinging about car alternatives. If people want to ride around on an electric scooter, an electric bike, or an electric skateboard in a city, I say, let them do it. Let them have at it. Bend over backwards to make it possible for them to do that. Because if you're going to go wanging on all the time about how cars are the worst and how dangerous cars are, then the least you can do is offer people a practical alternative to the car. Now, you know, there was a big fuss in the press this week because they're expanding the ULEZ zone in London again, which is the low emissions zone in London. That currently exists in the centre of London, but it's being expanded out to all of Greater London. So basically, if you vote for the mayor and have the option to vote for the mayor, you will be covered by the new expanded ULEZ zone. So people are quite rightly saying, well, this isn't really fair, is it? Like, you know, what happens to all these cars and vans that we, you know, are going to have to get rid of? Well, I mean, the real reality is that most cars and vans are exempt anyway. But again, why can't we have better solutions in cities? You know, what is it with everyone and the constant whinging about, oh, they're dangerous? Yeah, sure, you know, accidents are going to happen. This is a reality of the world. You know, I see people complaining about how deadly cars are, and I can't do anything but agree with them, because if you get hit by a car, you're going to suffer the consequences of it. It's bad. So then why aren't we doing more? Why aren't we making it more possible for people to e-scooter around? Why aren't we encouraging that behaviour? You know, I just don't get it. And I sort of understand that they can be abused and they can be dangerous. Well, surely there's a way around that with legislation of some kind, and why can't we, you know, actually get the police doing something about it? You know, I'm sick of it, frankly. And I think if we want a greener world, electric scooters seem like a really good way of getting it.
I think part of the reason why they're not sometimes seen as good an alternative as a bicycle is that with a bicycle you're also getting exercise, and I feel it's probably
sure,
only fair
but
for
not
me
everyone
to...
wants to have exercise. Like I understand, and yeah, sure, you should be getting exercise, that's a really good thing, but an e-scooter for one thing is a lot more convenient than a bike. You know, it's smaller, it's electric, so you don't arrive at work a sweaty mess, which is something that would affect me quite badly. You know, it's just an alternative. I get what you're saying. You know, yes, bikes, fine. But again, people whinge about bikes as well. And I think we just need to sort of start telling people to shut up and accept the fact that we're going to need to do something if we want a clean air in our city.
Well, David Belliard, whose name I've butchered, my apologies, in Paris, he's the Green Deputy Mayor, who is quoted in this Guardian story, which we'll link to incidentally, of course, at uktechshow.com. He said that a ban is one of the options on the table. He says, we still have three major areas of concern. First is safety for scooter users and others, such as pedestrians. The second is clogging up of city streets, despite having dedicated parking spaces for scooters. And the other thing is, I think his other point, it wasn't quite a quote here, but it was more about, like, is it actually environmentally better to have a scooter when you're driving vans around to recharge them? But
well, you're driving one van around to recharge 20, so I would say yes. And why can't the van be electric? I mean, who knows? I don't know much about this particular market, so I can't really...
It's a very weird double standard, actually, in France, because I'm reading here that just under 1 million of them were bought for personal use in Paris, which is actually very, very interesting. But you're not allowed to ride them here, at least not on public bikes if you own it. You can rent one and ride it on a rental because it's technically covered by insurance. But you can't ride one that you own, which is strange.
I mean, well, it's beyond that, isn't it? It's actually stupid, because how is anyone supposed to know if it's rented or not?
Because it has giant branding down the side. Usually.
I mean, really, though? I mean, is that how we're going to define things? It's like, well, that... I just don't understand it. I don't... It was designed, I think, to fail. And that's the problem. Is if anyone really wanted to make this a success, it would be... It, you know, there would be dedicated every single road in London would have a place where you were legally allowed to put an e-scooter when you were finished with it. A little red box on the pavement. Maybe with chargers or something. So, you finish your scoot, you plug it in, then there's no more vans going around to recharge them. Obviously, you do still need to move them around the city, so there is always going to be some need for that. But, you know, I think no one really wanted this to be a success from the start.
I did.
And we've been talking about it. Well, no, you accepted. But legislatively, I think the whole thing was like, well, you're not going to be allowed to buy your own, but you can still buy them. It's not like they're illegal to buy. What did they think was going to happen? They're on Amazon. People are going to buy them and they're going to use them in the city. The whole thing was absolutely stupid.
Well, I think maybe my about turn on them has just... Now I think about it, I think the moment I stopped liking scooters was the moment I bought a partially electric bike. And I think...
Right.
I think...
And do you now prefer that?
Yes. So I think it might just be... I think I'm just on a high horse, which is another great form of transport, but very inconvenient in the city.
It is very inconvenient. And also, horses were a real problem for pollution in the
city.
They
were.
Which is why cars were welcomed, because they didn't poo everywhere.
And you know what? When I was writing about scooters for Bloomberg back in 2018 or so, I'm fairly sure I even used that in one article as an example, because, there was...
Horse waste was such a problem that something had to be done about it.
Well,
cars seemed like a good solution. And then look where we are now. Now, I do love cars, so I'm not going to slag them off too much. But also, I would like to say that my car is ULEZ exempt.
Oh.
That is ridiculous.
Oh, I am glad. I am glad. Your giant Jaguar.
Yes, with a V8 engine that does 20 miles per gallon.
Yeah.
Is ULEZ exempt. So people whinging about it, really. I mean, I don't know what they're driving. It must be horrendous.
Yeah. Well, if you're driving something horrendous and would like to tell us all about it, do send us an email. It goes like this. hello@uktechshow.com. Do you want to talk about 6G?
Yes, of course I do. I've barely got 5G. Why wouldn't I want to talk about 6G?
Well, the rule is that the better the next generation becomes, the better and more useful the current generation becomes as a result. That's why 4G is now so good, because 5G is around. Anyway, Ericsson has said it's going to invest tens of millions of pounds to establish a research unit in the UK. I read this on ISP Review.
Well, that's nice.
Isn't it? And it's going to be used to research 6G mobile and related technologies. The expectation, this is something I learned a lot about this morning, the expectation is that 6G is going to go further than 5G in that it's going to use spectrum in the terahertz bands. Terahertz.
Well, if 5G terrified the tinfoil hat brigade, this is going to really wind them up.
And I had to look into this, but that basically means it's around like somewhere between 100 gigahertz.
Gigahertz, yeah, okay.
And basically between 10. The millimeter and the infrared frequencies. Like millimeter wave is what we're talking about with the very fastest 5G today. So somewhere between that and infrared, not like IR communication like you had on an old palm top in the
90s. Because that was very slow.
Mm. Although I did use it. I did use it.
Well, everyone did, because you only had to interchange phone numbers, and there were only a few bits.
Yeah. But here are some of the things. I found one of the promises that 6G comes with, from the proponents of it at least, quoted in this ISP review as saying that 6G will merge the digital and physical world, contribute to a more intelligent, sustainable, and efficient society, and help deliver new use cases that include multi-sensory, extended reality, precision healthcare, smart agriculture, cobots, and intelligent autonomous systems. Now, is that not word for word what 5G was meant to be?
I don't know. It sounded like a load of nonsense to me.
Also, what is a cobot?
I don't know. I'm going to ask.
A collaborative robot? Is this like the old...
Maybe.
The robots they give old people?
I really couldn't even guess.
Oh, here we are.
That.
I've Googled it in real time.
Okay.
Yeah. A cobot or collaborative robot is a robot intended for direct human-robot interaction. That needs a hyphen. I might just edit this Wikipedia. Hang on.
Could you do it later?
No, it's very easy. Direct human robot publish changes adds hyphen. I can't let that slide. I'm an editor.
Okay, all right, fair enough. There we go. Right. Everyone, this is real time Wikipedia, right?
Yeah,
here.
You can go and check. It's fixed now. Within a shared space or where humans and robots are in close proximity. Cobots. Anyway, so that's what 6G is going to enable, and it's not going to be around until probably 2030, by which time we'll be on episode 700 or something.
I'm not sure I'm going to make it to 2030, if I'm completely honest with you.
That's like 7 years away.
I feel like 50. My life is draining away.
Well, all of our lives are draining away, mate.
Well, mostly because I find the world so exhausting right now. Like, yes. It's just sucking the very will to live from me. Anyway, that aside, I'm sure this could have some exciting implications, but how are we expecting these signals to propagate anywhere? I mean, we're talking about you need to have a cell in literally every room that you use.
I think we'll all wear them.
Use of those.
I think they will put cells in our hats. I think
that's the only way they could do it.
Yeah, or every cell will be in a phone, and it's just one giant expanding, self-propagating 6G network of mobile cells.
I mean, I wonder if that mesh. Is a possibility, you know, so every phone is connected to every other phone and they send the signal to the nearest sort of fixed connection. I mean, I don't know whether that's a doable possibility. If every phone in the world was one big LAN, that would be both terrifying and, you know, a possible way of improving network infrastructure.
It's definitely possible. I mean, it's a mesh network.
Yeah, because some communications systems, like there is a Bluetooth thing, isn't there, that works. It was proposed, I believe, as a thing that would be useful for sort of festivals. So if you wanted to sort of have a festival in the middle of nowhere where there was no cell coverage or something, you would all of the phones could be connected to each other and you could send messages to your friends. So you'd be able to say, meet at the big hat-shaped tent for tacos and LSD. And that would be a good way of communicating in a sort of closed system. But I don't know if that's really a practical thing. But I mean, I as you well know, as we're approaching, you know, sort of 6 gigahertz frequencies for Wi-Fi 6E, those signals don't go well through even thin walls. So it becomes quite problematic.
There are definitely products that do that via Bluetooth. I just did a quick Google search and there are plenty of options, and some of these dates go back to about 2015. So it's been around for a while. Also, I mean, I also read this week, and this isn't in our running docket here, but I did see that Apple's satellite communication feature for the new iPhone is coming to the UK and Ireland in December.
Yes, I mean, that's an exciting thing, I think. Yeah. You know, in terms of, you know, being able to survive a horrible accident somewhere on a mountain. It's an extremely good idea. I think, you know, like the Apple Watch has saved lives, I can see us, it won't be very long before we get a story about that feature saving a life. So, good on them.
Not very long at all. I get to use a term now called, well, I get to quote the user of a Chinese social network whose username is Fatboy Snail Noodles.
Okay, now, that's very odd message for you.
Indeed. Hang on, which bit?
Well, the snail bit. But are we talking about noodles made out of snails?
Oh,
because that obviously wouldn't be good, would it? Yeah.
Oh, that's given me a sadness.
Well, let's assume that it's not that.
Oh, okay. Smell sensors, Ian. There's a story that came out of China this week. I have done very little to assert its genuine nature, as is the way of these things. However, it is a good jumping off point for a conversation. So take all this with a pinch of salt. Smell sensors in a shopping mall's public toilets in China warns shoppers which of the available booths are likely home to an unpleasant odor.
Brilliant.
And there's a screen outside the toilets that basically shows you in numerical and pictorial fashion which toilet may be the least unpleasant
appealing
to go into. Yes. Okay. It's in a shopping centre in Sichuan province in China. Potential, this is according, where did this come from? Metro. Potential users can check to see which stores are ready for action and which need to be left for 5 minutes. The screens show images of individual cubicles in the men's and women's sections with their own stink rating, allowing shoppers to take their pick. Which is great. And one user, Fatboy Snail Noodles, the aforementioned, yeah, asked, will this spy on you? Which is a whole other conversation. Toilets, cameras in toilets. I think this is a brilliant idea. Huge waste of money, huge waste of electricity, huge waste of everything. But what a great idea.
Is it a waste of any of those things, though? Because if it improves your experience, plus you won't need to waste time going in to cubicle and then immediately exiting it again, will save time, could have a big impact on the economy.
I mean I'm in favor of toilet tech. Like, I think it was Sega came up with a game for, I was in Japan, I'm not sure if it's anywhere else yet, but it was the idea where you basically, it was in a urinal for I was gonna say ejections of the penis. Basically, if you're having a pee, it gamifies it, and you have leaderboards of like hit the target and so on and so forth, which I thought was quite a fun idea. Whereas with this, I just think use your nose. I mean, literally use your nose.
Yes, but no one wants to use their nose, do they? That's the problem.
I think it could work the other way around. Do you remember that text I sent you the other day?
Yes.
Do you remember?
Well, I mean, go on.
It was the one that involved making eye contact with a cleaner and feeling a deep sense of shame.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
I think it would work very well if you could have the opposite effect, that actually if you are informed that the toilet that you are currently occupying is now the front runner in the horrendous aroma Olympics, it sort of shows you a live video feed of who's outside, so you can make your escape quickly and surreptitiously so as to not make eye contact with the next person. Making their way into your cubicle, because that is shame that cannot be erased.
It is. And it also, at the moment, one has to use one's ears for that. Now, if you're, you know, listening to a podcast or something whilst you go about your business, you might miss out on that subtle audio cue. So for me, I would say this sounds, I'm all for it. A little camera outside to see when it's quiet.
Yeah.
Make your escape.
Yeah. Escape is
let the toilet handle the, you know, stopping anyone else from wandering into your stink box.
Yeah.
And yeah.
This is the sounds kind of this is the kind of innovation that 6G should be helping with. Like, none of this cobot
absolutely
nonsense. This is the real activity, real human life improvement. And not even just humans. This could apply to animals too. I think we've exhausted that for all it's worth. Ian's going to take the next story. But if you've got any thoughts on any of this, maybe you've
amusing toilet stories you'd like to share with us.
Anonymous is fine. We will not read out your name unless you want us to. And actually, if you have a story like that and you want us to read out your name, you're probably not the person we want to talk about on the podcast. But anyway, hello@uktechshow.com.
I've never realised how old I'm getting before, but when I was at university, I wrote my dissertation on digital sort of TV and compression and that kind of stuff. So there was a time when I would consider myself a bit of an expert on this kind of stuff. But the BBC is finally upgrading its regional news to high definition. The switchover is expected to be completed in early 2023. So people previously watching BBC One HD would need to switch their TV to the regional channel to see their local news, or they would suffer a red box for the duration of the opt-out telling them to change channels. Newer platforms like Sky Glass and Virgin Media TV and BT's TV Box Pro are already apparently able to handle these regional variations. So I guess my Sky Glass, if I watch BBC One HD, I will see my local news in either in upscaled SD or HD if it's available. Why hasn't it happened before? I hear you asking over the podcast airwaves.
That's what I was asking you before we recorded.
Oh, right. So it was actually just me remembering that you asked me why it hadn't happened. Yeah.
That's right.
Well, it's a bit complicated. I think it must be mostly down to costs. So, for example, I mean, obviously, if you want to broadcast every regional variant in HD, there is a cost associated with that. It's a lot cheaper to do that in standard definition because you're using up more bandwidth on the satellite, which obviously it doesn't come cheap. So I presume that there's been a sort of a reason for that. There also might be some legacy thing, because the BBC does opt-outs for regional news. And I believe, and I'm not entirely sure, but I feel like this is kind of a rarity in the world. So if you're watching the BBC One network, when it comes time for the regional news, if you were on an analog standard definition over-the-air broadcast, your local network would be obvious because it would be whatever signal you were getting. So when the opt-out happens, it could only come from one place. With digital, that becomes a bit more complicated, and especially satellite, which obviously has a national coverage, it makes it more tricky. But that said, it is certainly possible, because when you set up your Sky system, you'll be asked for your postcode, and then it will deliver you the correct region. So I'm guessing that most of this must have been financial for the reason it hasn't happened so far. Broadcasting a lot of HD channels obviously is one thing. Having sets that are HD ready, buying the equipment for every region to make it HD obviously isn't that cheap. It's not just the studios. You've got to make sure that all of the outside broadcast cameras that go out and record stories are also HD. So that would have been quite an expensive process, I guess. And they may even have skipped HD and gone straight for 4K, I guess, and then downscale it for broadcast. But I couldn't say. But it does make one piece of sad news, which is that it will mean that the standard definition satellite channels will be shut, which means that if you're using
standard def BBC ones, presumably.
Yeah, so yes, exactly. So if you're using Sky Digital, like one of those original boxes from 2007 or whenever it was, I think it was earlier than that.
It
was 1999 or something Sky Digital launched.
Or Sky Plus ones.
Or Sky Plus, yeah. Those apparently have now reached small enough viewer numbers for the switch off to be practical. You have to remember when you talk about the BBC that there are rules in place that prohibit it from offering services to one platform that aren't available on another. So a lot of BBC innovation could be held back by the fact that if you can't do it on digital terrestrial, you also can't do it on digital satellite, because that would be against the sort of spirit of the license fee arrangement. So that does cause problems for the BBC.
It's anyway, just amazing that we are getting to 2023 when this is going to roll out, you said, in the spring.
Yes.
And only in 2023 are we finally getting regional news in HD. Just to me feels so old. I just assumed all regional news was already broadcast in HD. It's just amazing to me that all this talk of 8K sports broadcasts and we're only just getting regional news about Sunderland in HD.
I guess because it's not considered to be a priority,
I suppose.
You know, news in standard definition works just as well as news in high definition, really.
Yeah.
You know, sure, it looks a bit better, but are you getting the story any better? No, ultimately you're not. And it's expensive, and in some cases might require extra training. And, you know, you've got to remember that when you're talking about local, you know, regional news, you might be relying on satellite broadcast back to HQ to broadcast it, or it might have to be edited very quickly, which is more difficult the more resolution you have. You know,
true,
you can't edit a 4K video as quickly on an old computer as you can on an HD one. So it just, the whole chain has to be upgraded, and that's very expensive. And I guess, you know, when you're on a budget like the BBC is, that probably wouldn't be your number one priority. You'd rather have Doctor Who in HD, something where it's actually sort of different and you can see it. It's in 4K now, brilliantly. So,
Doctor Who, yeah, but iPlayer still, for almost everything, maxes out at 1080p, which I think is a huge disappointment.
It is, but I will say this. iPlayer works almost perfectly almost all of the time.
True.
And it is cost effective. I mean, you know, the BBC is not Netflix. It doesn't have revenue from 200 million subscribers. you know, it's more constrained than that. And yet iPlayer works flawlessly, you know, and I have big problems with the iPlayer picture quality. I do think it's a bit cack. But even so, you know, the fact is that it's a very well-designed platform. And it's kind of works well. If you compare and contrast to what was ITV Hub,
God.
No, exactly. It's not as easy as you think.
I've had bowel infections more enjoyable than sitting through ITV Hub or the old 4OD or whatever it used to be called.
Oh, I mean, that's still quite bad. But I will say it's very easy to block the adverts on 4OD.
Oh, really?
All four or channel 4, one word from next year.
Do you have? I was going to ask you about. That was it. Sorry, I just slightly had a bit of a brain fart there.
No, I know the feeling. To be fair,
do you?
Yes.
All right.
Pretty much every minute of every day is a brain fart for me these days. Go on.
Oh, okay. The frame rate on iPlayer, I noticed the other day, seems to be higher than 30 frames. I think it might even be around the 50 mark.
Well, there's no reason it couldn't be. I mean, bearing in mind that the frame rate for this country is supposed to be 25 frames, 50 interlaced. So either it's 25 progressive or 50 interlaced. So
that would
still
look
the information.
But that would look the same, whereas this looks like 50 progressive frames.
Well, it might be 50 progressive frames. Yeah, I mean, things like news and such. Also, one of the big problems with broadcast is that it's very, very difficult to switch the frame rate on the fly. So a lot of the... Because what you would get is when they change the frame rate, the TV would have to resynchronize, and that's considered to be unacceptable in broadcast terms. So instead, they tended to stick to one frame rate. When you're talking about iPlayer, if you've got a news broadcast that's being broadcast in 50p or sport, crucially, I know neither of us watch any sport, but sport, you want to be 50p if possible. There's no reason they couldn't do it on iPlayer. So I don't know if they do, but it's certainly possible. It doesn't have that resynchronization problem, I would imagine.
I just did a quick Google because this is totally off the top of my head. But there's a story from last year on T3. Oh, I swear on my dog's life, I did not plan this. But the story I have found on T3 was written by you.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't surprise me.
I'm putting that in the Discord. I honestly, hand on my heart, and you all know how much I love my dog. I did not plan that. You wrote that the BBC's R&D department has been testing out a 1080p, 50 frames a second video stream. So that's full HD with 50 frames as part of an experiment. So yeah. They have been doing it. So I'm right.
You see what I mean about a brain fart? Because I'd completely forgotten about that. I remember having the conversation with them, actually, because that was where I was talking to them about... Because they said, if we decided... If everyone in the country simultaneously decided to switch from broadcast to on-demand, there was no way that there's enough bandwidth in the country to cope with it. It would be absolutely impossible.
Oh, they always say that.
And that is that interview that came out of, because I was trying to get something else. I wanted to find out how much bandwidth had been used for the Olympics, and they couldn't answer that question, mostly because there isn't really an answer to that question. It's extremely difficult to give an accurate figure about how much peak bandwidth is used at any one time, because obviously the whole of the BBC is considered to be one thing, and so specifying things is difficult. But anyway, I'm glad I could provide future me some context for something I did a year ago.
That's brilliant. Well, I'm going to include the links to these stories at uktechshow.com. Look for episode 292 in the episode list, and you'll find the links. I'll also include a link to a BBC R&D post about high quality video streams on the iPlayer, because I'm going to read this as soon as we finish recording. So assume that it will be there and go and check that out. But how interesting, and what an unexpected twist of fate that something you wrote came back to haunt us, but in a good way, like
yes.
Casper the Friendly Ghost, not like the woman in the eponymous Woman in Black, which I read this week and was quite disappointed by. If you've got any views on any of these things, whether real or of the fantastical, do let us know. hello@uktechshow.com. I want to thank some patrons in addition to everyone listening live. We've got our thanks. Some regulars listening to us live. Charlotte's here, John's here, Kate's here, Luna's here, Mike's here, I'm here, that's obvious. Nick's here, Rich and Russ is here, Rich is here, Ian is also here.
At least 50% here.
At least 50%, but which half? It's up to you. But I also wanted to thank other patrons, including Tim, David Owen, Bo Hansen, some new joiners to the club. You can join them, or indeed everyone listening live, get the full version of the show every week, ad-free. Join the live audience, which frankly, I think is one of the best things that exists in the world. And I'm including sliced bread in that. But you can learn more about all the offerings, patreon.com/UKTech. And if you are any of our patrons, you're hearing our longer version of the show. You're also going to hear our story now, all about the weirdest computer mice in history. Well, we've just had what I think Ian and I would say literally the best conversation anyone has ever had about anything ever, and it was to do with mice.
I think you've pushed it too far there, because no one's going to believe that. But if you were thinking about signing up for Patreon to become a patron,
yeah,
I would say that this could be the week to try it out.
That was
because
good.
That was a good conversation, and I think last week's was pretty good too. We had some fun last week, didn't we? So
I don't remember.
If you've
last
been mulling
week.
It over,
yeah, I don't remember last week's conversation.
Well, I remember last week's show being a bit of a mess because, well, not a mess as such, but we didn't have any news,
no.
So we were sort of all over the place. But I remember feeling quite good about the podcast last week.
Yeah, I do. But considering that there was nothing to talk about, it went quite well. And so the same is quite true of this week. But hopefully, either way, you have enjoyed it. And as Ian says, it would be great to get people as a patron. However, if you are not in a position to do that or don't want to, please, it behooves all of us as friends of text message to go and leave reviews on Apple Podcasts or anywhere that you're listening to podcasts, because it would be fantastic to get some fresh blood into the listener sphere.
Let's make us the number one tech podcast in the world. I don't know how we would do that. There's so many of them.
We've been very high before now.
The algorithm weights new shows and a bit better, doesn't it? Like, you know,
it does.
It's easy to launch a podcast on Apple and be number one. It's less easy to sustain that over a long period of time.
Yeah, after 8 years, you need quite a lot of positive reviews consistently coming in. So it would be great if you might show us some love. We would certainly give thanks for that. And I think it is because of the US Thanksgiving that Tom Merritt hasn't sent us a promo for what's been happening on Daily Tech News Show this week. But I can tell you what has been happening in general, and I'm not going to. So thanks for listening, everybody. Ian, do you have anything you'd like to tease people with before I finish playing the outro music that has now just started?
No, I don't have anything to tease them with, apart from to say, come next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.